Good morning. Nice to see you. And blessings. Title of this message is In His Image. And if I was to ask you to recite the Ten Commandments, how many of you think you could do it? We probably learned them some time ago. But I've printed them on the back of the bulletin. I'd like for us to read them together. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourselves any graven image. You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Honor your father and mother. You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness. You shall not covet. I'm sure many of you memorized these as a child, most likely from the King James as the thou shalt nots. The first four have to do with man's relationship with God, and the last six have to do with man's relationship with fellow human beings. Today, I want to concentrate on the first two, primarily the second one. God demands our loyalty. He made us for His glory and to have a relationship with Himself. Seven times the Bible tells us that God is a jealous God. When we turn our affections away from God to anything else, we grieve the heart of God. God made us for Himself and not for anything else. The second commandment tells us that we cannot know what God looks like and that we should not try to make anything to represent Him. The Bible tells us that no one has seen God at any time, and if we have not seen Him, we cannot possibly know what He looks like. You may have heard the story of a girl in art class who was drawing on her piece of paper. When the teacher came and asked her what she was drawing, she says, "I'm drawing a picture of God." The teacher says, "But no one knows what God looks like." The girl confidently says, "They will when I'm finished." Any image of God that we try to imagine is totally inadequate. In spite of these warnings, it seems that, like all human beings, have tried to make some sort of false gods in their lives. The following quote comes from Today in the World. Though we do not face a pantheon of false gods like the Israelites did, we face pressures from a pantheon of false values. Materialism, love of leisure, sensuality, worship of self, security, and many others. The second commandment deals with idols. This may be something that most of us can't relate to unless we include life goals that revolve around something other than God Himself. What is the object of our affections, our efforts, and our attention? Where does the majority of our time go? On what do we spend the greatest amount of our resources? Or, as James Packer said, what other gods could we have beside the Lord? Plenty. For Israel, there were the Canaanite Baals, whose jolly-natured gods who were worshipped with a rampage of gluttony, drunkenness, ritual prostitution. For us, there is still the great gods of sex and shekels and stomach, the unholy trinity consisting of one God, which is self. And then the other enslaving trio, pleasure, possessions, and position, whose worship is described as the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. Then there's football, the firm, and family are also some. Indeed, the list of other gods is endless. And for anything that anyone allows to run his life or to become his God, and the, indeed, the list of other gods is endless. For anything that anyone allows to run his life becomes his God, and the claimants for this prerogative are legion. In the matter of life's basic loyalties, temptation is mainly a many-headed monster. Gusewardt's three basic but biblical rules are: every person has or serves a God in his life. Every person is transformed into the image of his God. And mankind creates and forms a structure of society in its own image. And that's the dilemma in which the church finds itself today. We have allowed ourselves to make God of our own image. We have created concepts of who God is in our own heads. We pursue the happiness instead of holiness. We buy the get-rich-quick line of the prosperity gospel that says, "Send me seed money and God will multiply it back to you." We seek health, wealth, happiness, and we expect God to give us these things, and then we get angry with God when he doesn't meet our expectations. Our idols are not physical objects, but concepts. Someone has said today's idols are more in the self than on the shelf. Israel has had trouble with making God in their own image. Exodus 32, 1 to 6. Now when the people saw Moses delayed coming down from the mountain, the people gathered together to Aaron and said to him, "Come, make us gods that shall go before us. For as for this Moses, the man who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him." And Aaron said to them, "Break off the golden earrings which are in your ears of your wives and your sons and your daughters and bring them to me." So the people broke off the golden earrings which were in their ears and brought them to Aaron. And he received the gold from their hand and he fashioned it with an engraving tool and made a molten calf. Then they said, "This is your God, O Israel, that brought you out of Egypt." So when Aaron saw it, he built an altar before it. And Aaron made a proclamation and said, "Tomorrow is a feast to the Lord." Then they rose early the next day. They offered burnt offerings. They brought peace offerings. And the people sat down to eat and to drink. And they rose up to play. My Bible history book describes what happened this way. Moses remained on the mountain many days while Yahweh rehearsed to him the contents of the law and gave instructions concerning the tabernacle and priesthood. Down below, camped around the foot of the mountain, the Israelites waited for their leader to return. Weeks passed and he did not return. They began to fear he was dead or that he had deserted them. They needed something tangible, something they could see and feel to hold them together. Moses had been Yahweh's representative, but now it seemed that he would not return. The crowd convinced Aaron, rather easily it seems, to melt down some of their jewelry to make golden calf to represent the God who brought them out of Egypt. Probably it was a wooden figure laminated with gold, a process they would have learned in Egypt. It is not entirely clear whether the people viewed this as a god other than Yahweh or were trying to create an image of Yahweh. And Yahweh is a name for God who brought him out. Either alternative was a violation of the covenant. We note that the next day Aaron commanded a feast to the Lord, which further indicates that this calf was to be a representation of Yahweh. I've also read that these ancient peoples thought that God rode on the back of a calf as his steed. Hence, this calf could have been represented as God's ride back to Egypt. Moses was up on the mountain receiving the commandments from God, and I always thought it was not fair of God to hold the people accountable for obeying the Ten Commandments when Moses had not yet brought them down. But now, a note, God had already spoken the words to the people back in Exodus 20 before Moses went up on the mountain. God's speaking was so frightening to the people that they were afraid and they begged Moses to talk with God and relay the message to them so they would not be afraid. So Exodus 20:18 we read, "Now all the people witnessed the thundering, the lightning flashes, the sound of the trumpet, and the mountain smoking. And when the people saw it, they trembled and they stood afar off. And they said to Moses, 'You speak with us and we will hear, but let not God speak with us, lest we die.' And Moses said to the people, 'Do not fear, for God has come to test you, and that his fear may be before you, so that you may not sin.' So the people stood afar off, but Moses drew near to the thick darkness where God was. When Moses came down the mountain, he was extremely angry. He threw the stone tablets down, breaking them. He burned the calf with fire as their punishment and made them drink the ashes he mixed with their drinking water. He sent the loyal Levites through the camp to kill 3,000 of the offenders. These Israelites made God to be in their own image rather than worshiping God as he had commanded them to worship. And so they brought judgment on themselves." Another example of people changing the correct way of worship comes to us from 1 Kings 12, 25 to 33. This is the history surrounding the death of King Solomon. Solomon's son Rehoboam was taking the throne as the next king. The people came to him and begged him to reduce their taxes. Rehoboam refused, and so the 10 northern tribes rebelled and chose Jeroboam to be the king over them. Jeroboam realized that if the people returned to Jerusalem for every required feast, that the people may be drawn back to the southern kingdom of Rehoboam. In order to prevent this from happening, he set up two golden calves. One was at the northernmost portion of the kingdom and the other at the southern part. He told his people that there was no need for them to go to Jerusalem to worship. These shrines were closer home. He even established different feast days and appointed priests from common people who were not Levites. And so I'll read this passage. "Then Jeroboam built Shechem on the mountains of Ephraim and dwelt there. Also he went out from there and built Penuel. And Jeroboam said in his heart, 'Now the kingdom may return to the house of David if these people go up to offer sacrifices to the Lord at Jerusalem. Then the heart of this people will turn back to their Lord, Rehoboam, king of Judah, and they will kill me and go back to Rehoboam, king of Judah.' Therefore, the king asked advice. He made two calves and said to the people, 'It's too much for you to go to Jerusalem. Here are your gods, O Israel, which brought you up out of the land of Egypt.' And he set up one in Bethel and the other in Dan. Now this thing became a sin for the people. They went to worship before the one as far as Dan. He made shrines on the high places, and he made priests from every class of people who were not the sons of Levi. Jeroboam ordained a feast on the 15th day of the 8th month, like the feast that was in Judah." But if you check back on all the feasts, none was on that time of day, month, year. "And he offered sacrifices on the altar. So he did in Bethel, sacrificing to the calves that he had made. And at Bethel, he installed the priests of the high places which he had made. So he made offerings on the altar which he had made at Bethel on the 15th day of the 8th month. in the month that he had devised in his own heart. And he ordained a feast for the children of Israel. He offered sacrifices on the altar, and he burned incense. Note the sins of Jeroboam were that he created the worship of what he said was the true God in his own design, and thereby he turned the hearts of his people away from the real image of God. He burned sacrifices on false altars. For this, God sent a prophet that cried out against the altar. The altar split apart, and the ashes spilled out. And Jeroboam's hand was withered from his sin. You can read that in 1 Kings 14. My concern in this message is that I believe Christians today have also created God in our own image. Many times we view God as a genie in a bottle, that if we just ask the right prayers, we expect God to give us what we want. And we blame God for the evil things that happen, and we wonder why God did not stop them from happening. Do we make a God of things in our lives? If so, in the process, we lose the real meaning of life. Here's a story told by Bill Hybels. All he ever really wanted in life was more. He wanted more money. So he parlayed inherited wealth into a $1 billion pile of assets. He wanted more fame. So he broke into the Hollywood scene and he soon became a filmmaker and a star. He wanted more sensual pleasure. So he paid handsome sums to indulge his every sexual urge. He wanted more thrills. So he designed, he built, and piloted the fastest aircraft in the world. He wanted more power, so he secretly dealt political favors so skillfully that 2 U.S. presidents became his pawns. All he ever wanted was more. He was absolutely convinced that more would bring him to true satisfaction. Unfortunately, history shows otherwise. He concluded his life emaciated, colorless, sunken chest, fingernails and grotesque inch-long corkscrews, rotting black teeth, tumors, innumerable needle marks from his drug addictions. Howard Hughes died believing the myth of more. He died a billionaire junkie, insane by all reasonable standards. We sometimes get our image of God from our father. In his book, Daddy's Girl, H. Norman Wright says the following long treatise. One of the main reasons people hold false perceptions of God is our tendency to project into God the unloving characteristics of the people that we look up to. We tend to believe that God is going to treat us as others do. The Galdries, some authors agree, we like to think that we develop our image of God from the Bible and teachings of the church and not from our relationships, some of which have been painful. It's easier if our God image is simply based on learning and believing the right things. Yet, intensive clinical studies on the development of people's image of God show that this is not true. One psychologist found that the spiritual development of God's image is more of an emotional process than an intellectual one. She brings out the importance of family and other relationships to developing what she calls one's private God. She says, no child arrives at the house of God without his pet God under his arm. And for some of us, the pet God we have tied on a leash to our hearts is not a very nice God, nor is it biblically accurate. This is because our negative image of God are often rooted in our emotional hurts and destructive patterns of relating to people that we carry with us from the past. Imagine a little girl of 7 who has known only rejection and abuse from her father, whom she dearly loves, She's at Sunday school, and she's taught that God is her heavenly Father. What is her perception of him going to be? Based on her experience with her natural father, she will see God as unstable, rejecting, abusing person she cannot trust. Consider just a few ways in which your image of your father may possibly have affected you and your perception of God, which in turn affects your self-image. If your father was distant, impersonal, and uncaring, he wouldn't intervene for you. You may see God as having the same characteristics. As a result, you feel that you are unworthy of God's intervention in your life. You find it difficult to draw close to God because you see him as disinterested in your needs and wants. If your father was a pushy man who was inconsiderate of you, or who violated you, or used you, you may see God in the same way, and you probably feel cheap and worthless in God's eyes, and perhaps feel that you deserve to be taken advantage of by others. You may feel that God will force you, not ask you, to do things you don't want to do. If your father was like a drill sergeant, demanding more and more from you with no expression of satisfaction, or with burning anger and no tolerance for mistakes, you may have cast God in his image, and you likely feel that God will not accept you unless you meet his demands, which seem unattainable. This perception may have driven you to become a perfectionist. If your father was a weakling and you couldn't depend on him to help you or to defend you, your image of God may be that of a weakling. You may feel that you are unworthy of God's comfort and support, or that he is unable to help you. If your father was overly critical, constantly came down hard on you, and if he didn't believe in you or your capabilities, discouraged you from trying, you may perceive God in this same way. You don't feel that as if you're worthy of God's respect or trust. You may even see yourselves as a continual failure, deserving all the criticism you receive. In contrast to the negative perceptions many people have found about God, let me give you several positive character qualities of a father. Notice how these qualities, if they existed in your father, have positively influenced your perception of God. If your father was patient, you're more likely to see God as patient and available for you. You feel that you are worthy of God's time and concern, and you feel important to God, and that he is personally involved in every aspect of your life. If your father was kind, you probably see God acting kindly and graciously on your behalf. You feel that you are worth God's help and intervention. You feel God's love for you deeply, and you're convinced that he wants to relate to you personally. If your father was a giving man, you may perceive God as someone who gives to you and supports you. You feel that you are worthy of God's support and his encouragement. You believe that God will give you what is best for you, and you respond by giving of yourself to others. If your God accepted you, you tend to feel God accepting you regardless of what you do. God doesn't dump you on you or reject you when you struggle, but he understands and encourages you. You are able to accept yourself even when you blow it or you don't perform up to your potential. If your father protected you, you probably perceive God as your protector in life. You feel that you are worthy of being under his care, and you rest in his security. You have likely heard someone say about some truth that we know about God, "My God is not like that." This is a case where that person has created God in their own image and has not accepted God as he represents himself. God is who he represents himself to be in the Bible. In any other image we create is a false God. The miracle of Christmas is that God came to the earth as a human being to show us the exact image of the God the Father, we need to study the life of Jesus Christ in order to fully know God. In the creation story, God said, "Let us make man in our own image." Each of us bears the image of God. Many times we do not reflect that image very well. Is it because we do not have a clear image of God for ourselves, and therefore we don't project the right image of a holy God? My challenge to you today is, be diligent to learn the truth of who God is, and then to live that image in such a way that those who see your life will see a reflection of the real image of God. That for which I would give anything and accept nothing in exchange is the most important thing in my life. Whatever that is my God. Lord, we come to you realizing that you are big and you are mighty and you are so multifaceted that we really do not and cannot fully understand you. Lord, I pray that you will forgive us for when we have placed false gods in front of our eyes, when we have projected images of you that are not true, when we have imagined you to be different than you are and have refused to accept you as you are. Forgive us, Lord. Help us, Lord, to study the life of Jesus Christ, to study who you are and as you present yourself in the Word. I pray, Lord, that you will help us to see your holiness and then in turn to live a life that reflects this image, the world around us. Help us to go forth this week in your way, in your will, representing you to the people that we meet in your name.